Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
It's episode 192, Bustin' Loose Baseball, alongside Toby Altizer. I'm Grant Paulson. Gareth Dameron is our producer, making everything sound smooth. You can follow Toby on Twitter at Toby_Altizer. I'm on social at Grant H. Paulson. Toby, we said when the Nats hit the road, we expected them to at least play better baseball than they did on their disastrous homestand, and that was certainly the case. They lose 2 out of 3 to the Dodgers, then they drop back-to-back games to lose 2 out of 3 to the Padres, but they did salvage a series win and a 4-5, 9-game, 10-day trip on the West Coast, which you'll take. That's much more along the lines of, you know, the quality of baseball, the win percentage of the season going into that long losing streak. And it took some heroic efforts, by the way, as we record here on Sunday. You know, they got a decent start from Mitchell Parker. They got some really clutch hits from Jacob Young late in the ball game, among others. And then Kyle Finnegan threw not 2, but 3 innings of relief to get the save in the game and to get a win, frankly, I guess more accurately, in the contest. So it was a pretty amazing day all the way around. But the Nats needed that one to not go 3-6 on the road.
Yeah, they definitely needed it. That game on Sunday was a big one for them. And like you said, some really big efforts. Drew Millis coming through in extra innings. You obviously had James Wood get intentionally walked 4 times, like you mentioned, and then Kyle Finnegan with the longest appearance of his career to go 3 innings and keep you in that ball game. That was a really, really impressive effort from him. So credit to a lot of those guys for coming through on Sunday. It felt like if you would have left 3-6 on the road trip when it felt like you were playing some better baseball, it would have been a little bit disappointing. But to come home 4-5, you're going to have some difficult teams come into town for the month of July. You feel at least a little bit better about the road trip and finishing off the month of June, which was very, very bad for the Nationals. You feel a little bit better. Grant, they entered the month of June just 2 games under 500. Entering the month of June, they were 28-30. They went 7-19 in the month. And so for the rest of the year, essentially, it's going to be largely irrelevant baseball because they leave the month of June at 35-49. And so, you know, it was kind of a make or break kind of month for them where they could have talked themselves into being legitimate wild card contenders of a sort, or at least going around 500. That didn't happen in the month of June, so it was a disappointing month overall. We've talked plenty about how bad that stretch of baseball was where they go on that long losing streak, but it seems like they've at least turned the tide and got back to more of a round 500 baseball team on the road trip. They were playing a lot better baseball. There's still the little things that we talk about all the time, the base running, you know, the starting pitching, or the bullpen still obviously got issues. Everything's still there, but the brand of baseball they were playing on the losing streak was just absolutely horrendous, and they got back to playing a little bit more like the team that we'd seen for the first part of the season.
Yeah, this looked a lot better in terms of the results. And I think more than anything, just the offense. They hit, they scored, they came up with big hits late in games that they were not getting during the long losing streak on the homestand. That said, when you say they played better, I'm not disagreeing with you, but they didn't play well. I mean, you watch this team, even in the win against the Angels today as we record on Sunday, like the Angels tried to give them that game, and they just wouldn't take it over and over again in the late innings. They constantly still make bad plays in the field. Luis Garcia had an inexplicable play on what should have been a double play to get out of a jam in the Angels series, you know, in a loss. They are bad defensively for the most part. They are terrible at running the bases, and they just make a lot of what I would say are like low baseball IQ or dumb plays, you know, where they don't throw home to get a runner, that they go to first base, Nathaniel Lowe, or little things. They don't tag from second to third. They don't score a run when they're at third base in a big spot on a fly ball, and you go, how the heck did he not come home? I mean, those things happen with this team all the time, and they certainly didn't stop happening on the road trip. But when you bash out, you know, 9 hits, 12 hits, 15 hits in different games, I think they had 11 against the Angels in the win, and you score 7 runs, it masks a lot of those things. And that's certainly what was happening when they were playing around 500 ball. I want to start with James Wood, because even though our podcast often becomes like a James Wood appreciation show, it has actually been a couple weeks since we really dove deep into Wood. It's just become the norm now that he's awesome. And so it's kind of hasn't been a storyline. But we're at the official 162-game marker going into play today for him in his big league career. So this was his 163rd game, 31 home run, 105 RBI, 275 average with a 865 OPS in his first big league season now, over 162. And he compares really favorably, even basically in a lot of the categories offensively with Soto and Harper through 162. And as I always point out, he does it with less support, less help as the guy in this lineup, which neither of those other guys had to do right away at this point of their career. But there was no better evidence of that, Toby, than today when he got intentionally walked in four consecutive plate appearances. And I don't think you're going to see this happen regularly because this doesn't happen. It was the first time since Barry Bonds 21 years ago that someone got intentionally walked four times in a game. And it was the second time since like the 80s. Barry Bonds and Manny Ramirez were the other guys to have it happen. But he became the seventh player ever to be intentionally walked four times in one game. And the others were, I mean, names like Roger Maris, as I mentioned, Bonds. I mean, these are some of the greats of the game. But he had a single in the first, grounded out in the fourth, and then if IBB in the fifth, seventh, ninth, and 11th. The Angels just didn't even give him a chance to impact the game. So this is something the Nats have to start thinking about here. I would move him up to number one in the order if he gets IBB'd a few times early in this homestand and teams just start to do that. Because the one thing they could actually do as a counter would be to have C.J. Abrams, who's hitting about 290 with an 850 OPS and playing like an all-star, hit right behind him. You know, Luis Garcia has been very solid offensively against righties, but he's not particularly good against lefties. So half the time, or probably 35, 40% of the time, depending on left-right matchups, you know, he doesn't really help you and doesn't protect James Wood. So I would consider maybe Wood, and if they don't want to have him lead off, that's fine. Then move it, you know, Abrams to three and have somebody else hit first, whoever they want that to be. If it's a speed guy like a Daylan Lyle who had three hits today, or Jacob Young's gotten it going offensively a little bit, if they want to try that out. I don't really care who it is, but to me, they need to have Abrams probably behind Wood if the IBB start to pile up. By the way, one last note, Toby. Last year, C.J. Abrams led the team with three intentional walks. The year before that, in 2023, he led the team with two. Again, James Wood had four in this game. They had six intentional walks as a team in the 2023 season. So this was an astounding thing to watch today.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting into territory, like you said. You're getting mentioned with Bonds and some of these other guys. And part of it is there's no protection in the lineup. This is something that I think is massively important for this team, because there is no reason that if I'm a team that, you know, for the most part, I would still give Wood at bats if there's no one on base or different things like that. Like, I understand he's not going to always be intentionally walked, but any situation where it's a run producing situation, first base is open, no one else in this lineup really scares me, with the exception of C.J. Abrams. And even he doesn't scare me immensely compared to what James Wood does. So to your point, if you put C.J. behind him, then maybe you can change a little bit of this. But still, James Wood is just so, so good. And people are really starting to understand it. I think around the league, obviously, they've respected him. But this is why it was shocking to me when he hit his first ever career walk-off home run against the Rockies. First base was open, and they decided to pitch to him, and he parks it in center field. The heck are you doing? You cannot let that guy beat you. And if I were doing an opposing podcast and James Wood ends up beating my baseball team and I'm playing the Nationals, I would be crushing the manager for not just throwing up four fingers and saying, James Wood, you can waltz on down to first. You're not beating us. Because he's the only guy that is really scary in the Nationals lineup. And so if they need to move it around, that's fine. It's not going to happen all the time. But I think it just shows you that he is so impressive already as a rookie, or I guess technically not a rookie, but his first full season in the bigs. And people really respect how good he is. People really understand that this dude, like you talked about, the numbers are on pace with Harper, are on pace with Soto, and he's by far the best guy in the lineup, and it's not even close. It's not even a discussion. And so teams go in understanding that that's the one dude you can't let beat you going into the series.
And well, Tobes, so they're starting to. Remember, it was only a couple weeks ago you and I were talking on the pod after the Rocky series. Like, what the heck were they thinking? I mean, they pitched in with the game on the line. He hit the walk-off winner. There was a series, I don't remember who it was, maybe you will, like a few days or a week before that, where it happened. And then I remember way back to the Orioles series where Brandon Hyde, before he got blown out, he pitched to him like three times in big spots, would hit a homer in one, a double in one, just tormented them. In fact, he single-handedly beat the Orioles with a couple extra base hits in one of those games where it's like, what are these teams doing? How are they not taking note of this. But to your point, at least the Angels made the decision. I don't know if it was just before today or when, but they basically said he will not be the one. Well, and I wonder how much that spreads now going forward.
And I wouldn't make a move just yet, Grant. I'm not reshuffling the lineup, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if there's a series where, remember how, well, it was Bryce Harper, right, that they went into Chicago and Joe Maddon.
He just got IBB'd three times in that game and then walked three other times, I believe it was. I mean, he got a six-walk game.
Joe Maddon essentially said, I will not pitch to Bryce Harper. I won't do it. And actually kind of screwed up Bryce for a little while because it was just kind of messing with his psyche. And I can't have that happen to James. So if you want to say, let's, you know, preventative, let's do it early, I could understand that. But I don't think that's quite to the point yet. I don't know that people are going to do that because that's a different baseball club. When Bryce Harper was doing it, like you're saying, this was a good baseball team. And you're essentially saying we're competing for stuff. We can't let this guy beat us. I think a lot of people would still look at it and say James Wood could go 3-for-4 with two bolts, and chances are it's two solos and we'll still win the ball game, right? Like a really good ball club still feels okay. But in any situation where he can drive runs in and he can do real, real damage, I would not be surprised at all if they just start walking him. Even if, to me, Grant, even if first base isn't open, I'm not necessarily walking him with the bases loaded yet, but you know, if there's a guy on first and a guy on second, I might walk him. Like, I really don't care unless CJ's behind him. And so that would be something that they definitely have to consider. But I mean, it just shows you how good he is. And it's kind of cool.
Here's
to see
a stat for you, Tobes. I jotted this down to throw at you just to get your live reaction. So among what I'm going to call everyday players, okay, not there's one other guy who's a catcher who has played like 20 fewer games than the regulars, but guys who play for their team every single day. In OPS in baseball right now, Aaron Judge, Cal Raleigh, Shohei Ohtani, James Wood. Judge, Raleigh, Ohtani, Wood. OPS, offensive value, offensive excellence. I mean, that's, what else can you say? That's chef's kiss.
I mean, that's absolutely incredible. And if you're wondering why Raleigh's in there, if you haven't been paying attention, go look at his numbers. So,
right. I mean, yeah, he's just only on pace to hit 65 homers.
This is absolutely insane just to see where he's at. And I remember before the season, we were talking about what kind of expectations do you have for him. And I was kind of like, let's just not be too crazy here because I don't want to set too high of a bar for him. And then he goes out there and has a decent season and we feel underwhelmed. And we were talking about, is 20 homers enough? Is 25 homers enough? I mean, heck, this dude's probably going to have 25 by the All-Star break or right around there. He's already at 22. I mean, it's absolutely incredible what he's done. He's only going to get better. Cause that's the thing too, that's still so encouraging about watching him is he's absolutely tearing the cover off the baseball. Teams have to utterly respect him. And I know your bid on Twitter for the entire season has been stop sleeping. Well, I feel like the Angels were wide awake in this series, especially on Sunday. But, I mean, he can get better, Grant. Like, there are areas where he still needs to improve, which, by the way, since we're talking about him, defensively, go look at his defensive numbers. I've always been down on his defensive ability. Well, I can't do that anymore. If you go look at his defensive numbers, really, especially this season, especially, he's kind of turned that corner, Grant. He's now becoming a really good player in left field and almost a plus defender, probably in a lot of cases. And
well, it's because of his range. You know, his range is special. Last time I looked was around 75th percentile, but it's the ground he covers. It's what we talked about a lot, right? Having watched him a handful of times in person and regularly night in and night out in the minor leagues. You know, he in center field, he could go get baseballs and it never looks like he's sprinting. He does not look fast, but you know, he's got 11 steals. He's one of the hardest guys to throw out on the team. Like he is one of the fastest players on the team. It's just the long strides will fool you. And the arm is really good. It's accurate, right? More so than, you know, the arm strength's like average. I think he was 54th percentile or so, but he's got some outfield assists on some accurate throws. But yeah, I was never concerned about the long-term defense. The defense was bad when he got called up last year. That goes without saying. Nobody would debate that. And we covered it pretty extensively. But he was playing a position he'd never played before at a level he'd never been at before. And he's drinking out of a fire hose trying to be the best offensive player on a bad team. Like, I kind of thought, yeah, it is odd to expect that he'd be really, really good. But yeah, he has gotten better. I think that's a good thing to point out. I want to give one more James Wood kind of stat before we move on here and see what you think about this. So kudos to Spencer Newsbaum from the Washington Post. I wish his name was Newsbaum, though, because it'd be cooler for a writer.
Way better.
if that was his name. But this was awesome. I did not realize this at all until he tweeted this. On top of these stats, he said, Wood has been in the starting lineup every single game since his debut. Third longest active games played streak in baseball. He said he's only the sixth player since 1961 to begin their career playing 162 straight games without a day off. Now, that spans two seasons, but part of this is, to their credit, I thought they did it way too often early in the year, but you know, instead of giving him a day off, they spell him, get him off his feet, and let him DH. But I did not realize he has not had a single day off since he got called up. And Tobes, I mean, 1961, only five other guys without a day off, first 162. Like, you just think about this year where Dylan Cruz got into that rut for a handful of days striking out, and they gave him like two straight days, you know? With young guys, that kind of thing happens all the time. Kobe Mayo can't get at bats for the Orioles right now because it's been a scuffle. Like, to not have one day off, that might be the most amazing of a lot of amazing numbers about James Wood.
Yeah, I mean, just think about the next time he takes a day off is the first one ever. I mean, how crazy is that? Where Davey says, we're going to give you the day off, which also shows you the importance for him in the lineup where he has to be in there. But it's a credit to the Nationals, too, where, like you said, I think early on there was some frustration with stop DHing him so much. Don't pretend like he's not going to improve in left field and he's some defensive liability like we just talked about. He's improved over there. But to their credit, they're keeping him on the field. They're keeping him healthy, and he's able to play every single day, and they make sure that his bat's in the lineup even if he's not in the outfield, just able to go out there and still DH, where, by the way, he's an absolute monster. So it's just – it's spectacular what you're watching. He's durable, like we just talked about. He's improved defensively. And at the plate, I mean, I saw MLB.com or whoever puts out these hitter power rankings already had him in their top 10 in the majors. And you could probably make an argument for top five in the majors already. And he's just in his first full season in the bigs. He just played game 163 of his big league career. It's spectacular to see. He's only going to get better, it feels like. And I mean, the ceiling is just absurd because you see the way that he plays the game, and it's kind of cool to see where he takes little aspects from Bryce Harper, who you've seen before. He takes aspects from Juan Soto, who you've seen before. And you've also seen him kind of tweak things throughout the season. We talked about defense. You've seen him be able to pull the ball. Like, it's just, it's crazy to think what this guy can be. He's already a superstar and he's the face of this franchise.
A couple other things maybe we can hit on this series, this game, and then I wanted to go more broadly, bigger picture stuff. I just wanted to acknowledge, mention this on the last pod, I think, but Jacob Young has really gotten it going here. His average is up to almost 260. Now, his OPS is terrible. It's a lot of singles, right? So there's only so much value he's going to provide. And long term, I think we now know this is probably a speed and defense extra fourth outfielder type. And when Dylan Cruz comes back, that'll be the plan, presumably. You know, you'll have Wood in left, Cruz in center, and then as of right now, Lyle, or ultimately maybe Hassel / Lyle in right field for the rest of the year, and JY will get in where he fits in. And I think that's kind of best for everybody. But I just wanted to acknowledge, you know, as much as everybody has been down on and killing Jacob Young, I thought his defense on this road trip was outstanding, right back to where it was last year when he was probably should have won a Gold Glove Award in center field. He made a couple of plays crashing into the fence on this road trip. He's also hitting .320 in the last seven games. He's hitting .302 over his last 15 games, and he's hitting .296 over his last 30 games, which is not a small sample size. Now, again, the slug is not high. I mean, it's a .370 slug over 30 games. But his OPS over his last 30, so you're talking about effectively, you know, a little less than one-fifth of a season, right? So around like 17-18% of the season. But his OPS in that time is over 700. League average is generally around 715, 720. I'd have to look at this year's. But point being, like, if he is serviceable and at 296, where he couldn't steal a base for a little while, and you and I are texting going, we love the guy, but if he can't steal a base, then he can't be on the team. Mm-hmm. Well, he has not had that issue. He's stolen, I think, four in a row now without a problem. He's out of that yips situation. And we're going on 30 games where he's actually hitting the baseball, getting on base, about a .340 OBP. You don't even need to do that to play the defense he does to be a serviceable, helpful player at 25 years old. He's still a gigantic win in the seventh round out of Florida in 2021 to have become what he has. But just a quick thought on Jacob Young, because I do feel like just the Nats Twitter stuff that I see, he is a punching bag for a lot of people.
Well, he kind of hits the markers of what I said I want out of Jacob Young. My thing that I care about for him is stealing bags. We understand that in defense. Those are huge parts of what he's going to be, and those are the two tenets. If either one of those things disappear, then you're in real trouble. And stealing bags, like you were talking about, was a real problem. Seems like they identified the issue and they're working on it and maybe have fixed it. And so it looks like he's going to be back to Jacob Young stealing bases again. So that's good to see. My thing was, if he could do about 330 as an on-base percentage, I didn't really care about his OPS. I don't really care about his slug. Frankly, I don't really care about his batting average a whole lot either. My big thing for him was you just got to get on base. And my baseline was about 330. And I got that number from what D. Gordon used to do for, the Marlins back in the day, or for the Dodgers for a time, where basically he was someone that was going to hit more in the bottom of the order, but he was going to score runs. He was going to be a menace on the base paths. And that was his thing. And he had about a 330 on base through that stretch where he was a really effective ball player. And so that was kind of the baseline I needed for Jacob Young, because the defense is going to be spectacular. And it was really weird to see him go through that stretch where he couldn't steal bags. But if he's back to stealing bags and then he can keep that on base over that 330 mark that I've kind of set as the benchmark, then he's a helpful big leaguer. He's someone that can come through and he's going to go out there. And if he gets on base, then he's going to steal second. And basically anytime he gets on base, it turns into a double. If that's the case, then he's an effective player. If it's just a fourth outfielder, that's fine. If he's someone that can play out there and he's your nine hole hitter every day, I think that's fine as well. So it's good to see him get back. He's swinging the bat a little bit better, and which has been really, really good to see, because him being able to drive the ball and have some doubles mixed in here as well, I think is kind of a welcome surprise. But the main thing for me is you got to steal bags if you're Jacob Young, and it seems like they identified the issue and he's kind of fixed that now.
Drew Millis got called up and then sat and watched Riley Adams play for a few straight days. I don't understand what they've done at catcher really at all. I don't get why K-Bert Ruiz basically was Cal Ripken Jr. for 4 months this season. And then, he's burnt out and fallen off. And that's not the only reason he's playing poorly. That's kind of his career here over the last few years. But he runs into a wall early. And Riley Adams, as soon as K-Bert is down with an injury, becomes like an Iron Man everyday player. When you called up Drew Millis and you could give him a rare opportunity, this is, I'm not saying he's the long-term catcher. He's certainly not. But I think he has a chance to be the best of the three catchers. And with K-Bert out, it's kind of a golden op to just play Drew Millis. And then for several days they didn't. But he did play on Sunday for the first time. And he went 1-for-3 and scored 2 runs. He drew a walk and doubled. The double was actually huge in extra innings as part of that 3-run 11th. So a big moment for him. I'd like to see him play a little bit more. He's a guy who, again, no reason to make him something he's not, but we know what the other guys are. And that's two of the lowest and contributing catchers in the sport.
One of the things that I would like, and for them to consider as a factor, if, when you're making a decision when K-Bert comes back, is Riley Adams is slow on the base paths. He's not particularly good defensively. And at the plate, throughout his career, he's given you a little bit of power, but this year he's kind of struggled, and he's come out of those struggles a little bit recently. But I mean, we all heard the streak that he was on for quite some time, where it was like 0-for-30 for a long time.
He was 5-for-60 in the season, essentially.
Yeah. So we kind of know, like, he has been obviously through it. Drew Millis gives you something that you don't have, right? A catcher who's athletic, can run the bases well, a switch hitter like K-Bert. So it doesn't really matter if it's a lefty or a righty on the mound. He can come out there and give you some help. I would like for them to consider, when the time comes, assuming Drew continues to play well, if Drew gets his opportunities, which is, by the way, why I don't understand what you're saying. Why does Riley Adams immediately turn into Iron Man? You need to figure out what exactly Drew Millis looks like again when he's up here in the bigs. But they have to really consider, if Drew plays well while K-Bert's on the injured list, he just gives you something different at the catcher position. And I would like to keep him on the bigs regardless. Honestly, like, it's not like Riley Adams was being insanely effective when he was the backup catcher. So it's not as if they have to keep him, but I think you got to consider keeping Drew Millis just as a change up to what you have with K-Bert, because you can't pinch run Riley Adams for K-Bert and feel like you're getting that much of a speed upgrade compared to Millis over K-Bert, right? I mean, I think there's some things that you got to factor in there, and I'd like to see him get a nicer look down the stretch here.
It just seems like an easy place for them to try something different. I mean, it's not always easy to do that because we've got this guy under contract, or you've got that guy that is young and developing, or, you know, you're keeping the spot warm for this reason. There's a lot of planning and politics and this year versus the 3-year plan versus the 5-year plan that all goes into things. At catcher right now, you've got a guy in Ruiz who's slowly proving it's his job until Caleb Lomavita or somebody else is ready to take it from him. And, you know, Adams, while he's, I have nothing against him, he's a nice guy, and I think against lefties especially and providing some power off the bench, like, he could and should be a big league catcher. I just think it's the kind of season where he could probably benefit from a fresh start somewhere else. And, you know, you give Millis an opportunity. We're 85 games in, and the Nats have two of the 5 or 7 least productive catchers in the sport, you know, and two of the guys that have, their catching position, and it's not even close, is just so far below what is
it's not controversial to see the worst catching position in the bigs and say there should be a change.
Right. And that's not like an opinion, right? That's, I mean, those are numbers. That's war based. There was a big piece written on FanGraphs about this where, you know, they're going to be historically one of the worst catcher positions in terms of value if things continue. Now, to your point, Riley Adams had 4 hits the last couple games and drove in a run in a couple straight games. And maybe if he got to play every day, you know, he could start doing something offensively. I'm not even suggesting that's not the case, but Riley Adams is not young. Like, it's not like he's a kid who we don't know what he is. He's been in the big leagues with this team, believe it or not, since 2021 was when we first saw him with the Nationals. So this is now year 5. In DC is like their backup catcher, basically. He's going to be 30 years old coming up in, I guess he just turned 29. So, you know, he's 29 years old. I just feel like it's time to give Millis a shot and see what he's got.